Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, March the 11th. And welcome to our commentary. I just want to quickly point out that I have a post over at the American Thinker. It came out actually on Sunday. You maybe didn't have a chance to read it, but I recommend it to you because I'm talking about, in this post, I'm talking about the upcoming presidential debates. You know, we assume that there are going to be debates in the fall between the two presidential candidates. By the way, that was not a guaranteed thing in the past. You know, the famous Kennedy-Nixon debate of 1960, that was the first and the last time that had ever happened. And then we went to 1976 between then incumbent President Ford and challenger Governor Jimmy Carter. And then it became more of a standard after that, you know, the famous Reagan-Carter debate of 80, Reagan-Mondale in 1984. But for a long time, we didn't have debates. So the idea that this is a guaranteed or something that the candidates have to do, they don't have to do it. I mean, it's kind of a choice that they make and people expect it, but they don't have to. They don't have to do it. But anyway, in the fall, I think there is the possibility that we don't have any, particularly if Joe Biden is the candidate. I think he may very well say, I don't want to do it. That, you know, they'll say something about Trump or whatever and not have the debates. Now, I was listening to a theory. This is after I wrote the post. I was listening to a theory by one of the political pundits who was saying that if we get to the fall and President Trump is ahead, let's say, or Joe Biden is behind, President Biden is behind, that Biden may need to do them. But I don't see any scenario where you would want to send out Joe Biden to a presidential debate. I just cannot see any. I mean, if he's behind in the fall, sending him to a debate is not going to make life any better for him. So I'm on the side here where I say that we debate because, as I mentioned in my article, President Biden cannot do them. I mean, literally cannot do a debate in his condition. But, you know, I could be wrong. I could be wrong on that particular point. I've got a post coming out on Tuesday morning where I'm talking about, you know, what is happening to the Democrat Party and some of their traditional supporters, meaning non-white voters. For years and years, the Democrats have always relied on non-white voters. What I mean by that is African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, and other groups that have voted Democrat over the years, whereas the Republican Party was more a party that would rely on white voters. But something is happening this year, and that's what I'm talking about. There's a great article by Rui Teixeira. He is a writer. He's touched on a lot of these topics before. And there's also a poll that came out, New York Times Siena College poll, where they're showing that support among non-whites for President Biden is dropping. That, you know, this is a group that he won big the last time. Well, he's not going to win him big this time if the polls are correct. And they talk about something that many of us have seen happening in the Democrat Party, which is the party is becoming more of a left-wing party. They used to be sort of a, you know, middle-of-the-road, blue-collar party that would appeal to people in the labor unions. They would appeal to a lot of people in that center, maybe leaning a little bit to the left, but still very much in the center, traditional people. That's not the party that the Democrats have become. They've become a party more what I would call the left-wing college professors who would rather talk about climate change than the impact of, you know, all of this green policies would have on refinery jobs, let's say, in South Texas, just to give you an example. Or, you know, they're more of the party that would be listening to NPR versus, I think, a lot of the non-white workers are probably listening to, or non-white voters are probably listening to talk radio or something else, or maybe getting their news from a different source. So you're seeing this party, you know, break into a couple of directions, and these two groups don't have a lot in common. they don't have a lot in common. And this other non-white group that has historically voted Democrat, it's starting to reconsider their position. Many of them like what President Trump is saying. Now, I would caution the Republicans that this doesn't necessarily mean they're always going to vote Republican. I think it may be more Trump in the message that he's sending, particularly, you know, Buy American, Made in America type message that obviously appeals to a lot of these non-white workers who are losing their jobs to companies who've gone overseas. So this may be more of a Trump phenomenon than a Republican phenomenon. We have to see what comes after a Trump presidency with respect to these voters. But it's a fascinating situation that you see, you know, you see Donald Trump breaking up some of these Democrat alliances, these voting alliances. And then maybe that's the reason that they're in such a panic about him. You know, you hear these Democrats saying that Trump is a threat to democracy. He's not really a threat to democracy. He's a threat to the Democrat Party, which is an entirely different argument, an entirely different situation. Yes, he is a threat to the Democrat Party because he's blowing up these alliances that have traditionally put Democrat votes in the bank. I mean, look, the Democrats, and I've seen this here in Texas, the Democrats basically wake up on election day knowing that they've got 90% of the black vote and 70% of the Hispanic vote, particularly American vote. I don't think it's Hispanic overall, but certainly in the Mexican-American component of that vote. Well, that's not the case anymore. I'm not saying the Republicans are going to win those two groups. No, but they're going to reduce that. Let's say that, for example, Donald Trump can take that 90% and bring it down to, let's say, the low 80s. So it's 17, you know, 16%, particularly his black men vote for Donald Trump. That's a difference. That could very well be the difference, let's say, in the Senate race in Ohio, or, you know, the Senate race in other places, Wisconsin, for example. That could be the difference there, or Michigan, to name three examples where the black vote is significant because they have large cities. What if he can bring the Hispanic vote into, let's say, not 50%, but let's say bring it to 40%, 42, 43%. Well, that could be the difference in Arizona and Nevada, for example, winning those states and electing Republicans to the Senate. So that is the impact that his policies are having. And the Democrats are in a full panic. You know, they're saying that he's a threat to democracy. No, what they're really saying is he's a threat to the Democrats, because he is changing the playing field and making the playing field a lot more friendly to him. I'm not necessarily saying Republicans, but definitely more friendly to Donald Trump. And that could have a down ballot effect. So check out my post. It'll be out Tuesday morning talking about how Trump is a threat to the Democrats, not to democracy. Well, as you may remember, over the weekend, I guess President Biden was being interviewed. And this is such a silly thing, this whole thing about the definition of what an illegal alien or illegal immigrant is. First of all, an illegal alien, this is right out of the book. I mean, this is not something that the Republican Party came up with. Illegal alien is a legal definition of a person who's in the country without papers. That's all that it is. It's a technical definition. It has nothing to do with a person's personality, or it's not anything other than just a technical definition of what a person is who's in the country without papers. So you may remember that the night that he was giving the State of the Union address, that Congresswoman from Georgia said something about, you know, the young woman who was killed down there. And that night of the speech, President Biden said, yes, illegal immigrant. Then the next day he was confronted by the press and he once again said illegal immigrant. He went further than that. He said, well, he's not supposed to be in the country anyway. So that's, I think, the real Joe Biden, the one that we had known over the years. I think that's more him speaking without having a script. Well, apparently they got a hold of him. And when he was doing this interview with a fellow from MSNBC, he walked it back and he said, no, I shouldn't have said illegal immigrant because that's an insult to these people and so on and so on. Well, apparently now they're walking it back again because the reaction was so great that they're walking it back again. Now they're saying, well, no, he didn't say this or that. Look, this is a confused White House. And the reason they're so confused is because the man in charge doesn't honestly know what he's saying. And it just all depends what they put in front of him. And it's just, it's sad because it's not just our local politics that this impacts. People around the world are looking at this guy. You know, our adversaries are looking at this guy and they're saying, is this guy really in charge? I mean, is this the guy really who's going to pick up the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning and make a decision? That's what they're our adversaries. That's how they think. That's how they look at this man. And honestly, it's hard to say. It's just hard to say whether or not, you know, whether or not this is a man who's going to make a decision like that. Just a couple of quick things from the speech. You know, President Biden once again kept talking about people paying their fair share of taxes. That is one of the biggest lies ever. The Democrats continue to use that line that, you know, some people are not paying their fair share. The rich are not paying their fair share. That's just garbage. And all you have to do is look at the statistics that the IRS puts out where they, you know, they tell you what group pays what. And the fact is the top 1%, the top 5% are paying way, way more than any other group. In fact, half of the country, you know, if you take the taxpayers in a group and you take the second 50% of that group, they're only paying 3% of all the income taxes. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong. Okay, maybe we can improve that. But what I'm saying is if so many people are not paying taxes, why are the Democrats continuing to talk about fair share? I mean, it's an absolute bit of demagoguery, and it's the kind of thing that just divides the country. It doesn't do anything to create jobs or make the country any more prosperous than it is today. Just a quick note on this day in history, 2004, on this day in 2004, you had the big explosion in Madrid, Spain, where they had that big terrorist attack. They blew up a bunch of trains during rush hour in the morning. It ended up killing about 200 people. It became a big political thing in the elections in Spain. They were having elections a couple of days later, and the left was able to exploit this terrorist attack and use it against the prime minister who had sent troops to Iraq. So eventually the troops came out, but the terrorists did not leave Spain. That's the sad reality of it. But this was a horrible day for the people of Spain, and the reaction of the socialist government turned out to be a lot worse. On a more musical note, a more happy note, we remember that Lawrence Welk was born on this day in 1903. Now think about that. That's a long time. I didn't realize he had been born that long ago, but he lived into the 90s. And look, if you grew up in my generation, then you probably remember Saturday night at 6:30 Central Time, the Lawrence Welk Show. I think it was syndicated across the country. I don't think a particular network carried the show, but it was syndicated. But I can remember many, many a Saturday night at my parents' home, they would put on Lawrence Welk at 6:30, and then the baseball game came on at 7. So we would sit there waiting for Lawrence Welk to finish the show. And then the baseball game would come, or the baseball game or whatever other sport was in season would come on at 7 o'clock. But I came to like Lawrence Welk. I thought he was a very likable fellow, but at the same time, a great musician. And, you know, you can still watch some of these videos on YouTube of the Lawrence Welk show. I guess one of my favorite ones is when he's playing polka. I like that one a lot. The fellow who played the accordion was also one of my favorites. I can't think of his name right now, but he was also one of my favorites on that show. And some of the girls who would dance were just absolutely great. So Lawrence Welk was born on this day in 1903, passed away in 1992. Thank you for listening, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.